Welcome to the podcast of Trinity Church London. You're listening to a message given on a Sunday morning. If you'd like to know more about us and the life of the church, please visit trinitychurchlondon.com.
Isaiah, in this passage, is talking to Israel in a really vulnerable state. They're in a place where they've already been conquered by the Babylonians, and they're just about to be overtaken by a number of other nations. The Macedonians, the many others, the Persians, a few others, and ending in the Romans, which is where Jesus comes. So they are a nation that is struggling under the weight of what they carry and what is being placed upon them by all these different nations. And coming into this darkness is this glimmer of light, which is called a servant song. Now, there are four servant songs in the book of Isaiah, and this is one of them. And this song is meant to bring hope. It's meant to bring life. It's meant to bring something of God into them to encourage them in the place that they find themselves. And it kind of resonates with us in two levels. In our culture, I would say our culture, because Aussie culture is very similar to UK culture and where we're at in terms of faith and stuff. And into a culture of brokenness that is chosen not to trust God. And I love the simplicity of scripture sometimes. Like, the Israelites were in this state because they didn't trust God. And I would love to say that I stand before you having always trusted God in absolutely every single thing, but reality check, none of us can always trust God in every single thing because we're human and we struggle with that sometimes. And you may find yourself in the same place as the Israelites were, which is in a difficult place because you've not trusted God. And in that place comes a voice of comfort, not a voice of judgment. It's a voice of love and not a voice of condemnation. It's actually God calling us out. And in this culture we find us today, this same voice must resonate today. It's a voice that calls us out of where we are into all that he has for us. You may put yourself in this place, and this really is for you. Let's read this servant song together. Verse 1 says, "Behold my servant whom I uphold, my chosen, in whom my soul delights. I have put my spirit upon him. He will bring forth justice to the nations. He will not cry aloud or lift up his voice or make it heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, and a faintly burning wick he will not quench. He will faithfully bring forth justice. He will not grow faint or be discouraged till he established justice in the earth, and the coastlands wait for his law." The most important thing about a song, now I'm no songwriter. I've tried, thought I would be okay at it, but I'm a terrible songwriter. I just can't do it. But the most important thing about a song really is the content of the song, but who sings it as well. And in this passage, there's a clear parental tone to it. There's my servant, my soul, my delight, my spirit. There's this parent watching over the Israelites, giving them this this message. And I don't know if you've ever been in a playground and you've seen a child fall and the child starts screaming. And they're screaming and screaming and screaming. And you see adults will gather around and like, "You're there, little Johnny. I hope you're okay, little Johnny." And all this, oh, at least I hope that's his name, Johnny. We don't know who he is. And this child is looking around, screaming, screaming, screaming for the parent. And the parents are looking around and they're like, "Where is this parent?" Slightly judgmental way, like, why are they not hovering over their child like they should be? And then you see the dad or the mum in a full sprint coming across the playground to pick them up and grab them in their arms. Actually, the voice of comfort is the most important voice. I can sing a song, but it's not going to resonate with you. When God sings a song over you, it resonates with you. Does that make sense? And in this song here, it is the voice of God, the Father, that parental tone singing over his people and over his servant. And that's the song that God still sings over us today. It's a beautiful song, isn't it? He's singing this over us today, this voice of comfort. And who is he singing about? Who is the servant? You could think the servant is Isaiah. I mean, that would be a relatively, the way they heard it in that day, that would have been a relatively an easy thing to come to. He's there to bring hope. He's there to bring joy. He's there to encourage the Israelites. That's part of his role. But actually, we know now, and they will have known at that point, that it is a song pointing to the Messiah, pointing to the one that could come. We see that significance in Jesus' baptism, right? When Jesus is baptized in the water by John the Baptist and raised out, we see the Spirit of God descending on him. We see God the Father proclaiming over his Son, "This is my Son whom I love, with him I am well pleased." We see the servant, the delight of God, and the Spirit descending. So this song here in Isaiah is clearly talking about the Messiah and when the Messiah, the servant, will come. And how is the Messiah to serve? The Messiah is to serve in a unusual way. Because the whole thrust of this passage is that justice will be proclaimed. Do we have any lawyers in the house? I know there are some lawyers in the house. Yes, Emmanuel. Now, Emmanuel, you're a brave man to stick your hand up. Because lawyers, we're not quite sure about lawyers. I work for a law firm. So, and they were good people. So, yeah, like you, Emmanuel, like you. They did really well when things were going well and really well when things were not going well as well.
I was going to say, it's Isaiah 42, not 40.
Isaiah 42. Sorry, yes, it is. Isaiah 40. Yeah, apologies. Isaiah 42, yeah. Yeah. There we go. So we've got some lawyers in the house. So if you're facing legal trouble, you know where to go. But in this, when we think of justice, we think of establishing a just and fair society. We think of legal justice, the right, the wrong, all those sorts of things. That actually the Messiah, maybe the Messiah's task was to establish this new society. But actually here, the most clear indication of what this justice means is the last word, where it talks about the coastlands wait for his law, for God's mishpat, that's the Hebrew, which basically means the king or the judge's pronouncement of what is right and what is true. So what is being brought here is not a legal justice. What is being brought here is the Messiah is there to bring what is right and true. So you have actually Yahweh who decides what is right and true, God the Father, and you have his servant coming in to establish what is right and true in this passage. And it says to bring forth, which means to publish, to show, to publish and to show. And if you want to publish something, if you want to make sure something has legs and it keeps on going, then you get the biggest voice, right? You get the loudest voice. You get the voice that resonates in our age, the voice that has the most followers, the voice that is the clearest, the most charismatic. And then you find the strongest people. Then you find the ones that everyone wants to be like, you know. Everyone wants to, oh, look at what they're wearing. Ooh, I want to look like that person. Or I want to have the followers that person does. Or I want to be known like that person is known. But actually the Messiah, when he comes, he does it completely the opposite way. It says he will not cry aloud or lift up his voice or make it heard in the street. A bruised reed he will not break, a faintly burning wick he will not quench. Actually, he's not there, the Messiah, to lift up his voice to be heard. He actually wants voices to be quieted sometimes. When he first started performing his miracles, it says in Matthew 12, when this specific passage, Isaiah 42, is quoted, it says actually that Jesus was fulfilling the role of the Messiah when he told the person he healed, don't go and tell anyone else. And actually the people that he went to, that he chose to minister to and bring out and bring up, were the bruised reeds of that culture, that society. They were the faint wicks. They were the ones who were downtrodden, pushed aside, ostracized from society, not considered holy enough. And this image of the bruised reed is an interesting one. You ever seen a reed? It's got an internal strength to it, that enables it to stay upright even though it sways in the wind. A bruised reed is one that is being crushed and pressed and has no more strength itself to stand up. It needs something to come around and bind it together to help it to stand up. And this faint wick is one that has no more oil in the jar. It's at its end. It's on its last legs. It is really struggling. The role of the Messiah in establishing this right and true, what is right and true in society, entailed and integral to it was that no one was dismissed. No one was put to the side. No one was beyond repair. No one was used up near extinction. No one couldn't be cured, mended, resupplied. And that's the heart of God for us today. And that's the heart of God for you today. I remember a time when I was really struggling. We were actually landed from Dubai, taking a big faith step, didn't really know what God was going to do with us. And then we were like, yeah, this is going to be amazing, first month in. And then doors started to close. Month three, yeah, I think it's going to be amazing. Then month six, month eight, and a year goes by, and we are just like, what on earth is God doing with us? We felt like that faith was starting to go downhill a little bit. Have you guys ever been there? That's just starting to get to the point where we're asking serious questions. And we saw a faithful man of God who served for many years, and he said one phrase which has stuck with me ever since. He said, God does not waste his people. God does not waste his people. He doesn't take you from a place of everything's going well, so you step out in faith and then things are terrible, and then leave you there. That is not the heart of God. Actually, the heart of God is to see you raised. The heart of God is to see you supplied. The heart of God is to see you bound up. But it's him that binds you up, not yourself and your own skills and your own strength. And it's not you that puts the oil in the lamp. It's him that puts the oil in the lamp. Does that make sense? So we've got to get to the point where we are at the lowest. And it sounds hard and it's difficult, and it is. I hated it. It was so difficult. But you get to the bottom, and God is there waiting for you, ready to raise you up. He took me from the mire and the clay, the mud, and seated me with princes. That's all of our stories, right? That's our story. You see this expressed beautifully in Mark 9, 17 to 27. I'm going to read this because it displays this, the heart of God, so well. It says, a man in the crowd answered, teacher, I brought you my son who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. You unbelieving generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. So they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled away, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered. It's often thrown him into the fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. If you can, said Jesus, everything is possible for one who believes. Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. That's a cry of desperation, isn't it? When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. You deaf and mute spirit, he said, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said he's dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. What a beautiful story of the Messiah reaching down and pulling up those who are struggling. You've got a father. I don't know if you, the dads out there, you do anything for your kids, right? Mums as well, you do anything for your kids. And this father, for years, had the physical scars and the memories of pulling his son out of fire and out of water. It said the son has been trying to, or the spirit's been trying to kill the son by throwing him into fire and throwing him into water. Who's the one that's going to be pulling him out of the water, drenched, soaked through in the middle of the night? Who's the one that's going to, who's going to be dragging his son out of the fire, scars and burns on his arms? And yet Jesus comes to him and says, I will do this for you. Even the father is struggling to muster the faith to say, yes, you can do it. He says, if you can do it. Have you ever been there? Lord, if you can do this. And Jesus does it. He says, everything's possible for the one who believes, but he doesn't wait for him to believe and then do it. He does it because he's a God of compassion. He's a God of love. And you see the son, a boy so oppressed he couldn't hear or speak, and he had come close to death so many times. He was like that faint wick. His life was ready to be extinguished. And Jesus draws him out and pulls him out. And I want to tell you, church, it had to be like this. That what is right and true is that no one is dismissed, that no one is put to the side, that no one is cast out. It had to be like this. Not because Jesus, in deciding to come down and establish a kingdom, was surrounded by a group of spiritual consultants and said, here you go, this is what you should do. It had to be like this because the kingdom comes from the character of the king. It's the character of the king that forms what the kingdom is and is going to be. And Jesus himself had all of the Father's exact nature in him. That when he came down and when he brought this new right and trueness into the world, that he brought exactly who the Father was, exactly who the King was. It says this in Lamentations 3, 22 to 23, the steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end. They're new every morning. Great is your faithfulness. It says in Exodus 34, one of the most quoted passages in Scripture, then the Lord came down in the cloud and stood there with him and proclaimed his name, the Lord. He passed in front of Moses, proclaiming, the Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. The Lord, the compassionate and gracious God, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness. That's the God we worship. That's the one we follow. This word compassion, every single part of that word, the noun, the verb, the adjective, directly relates to the womb, the Hebrew word for womb. And the compassion of God is the same as the compassion for a mother with an unborn child. When the unborn child is in distress, the mother is in distress as well. When the unborn child is having a great time and kicking about, the mum feels absolutely everything. That is the compassion of God for us. That when we are in distress, that when we are in our lowest, when we are faint, when we are bruised, is he feels that as well. That is the compassion of the Father. And Jesus, having, as it says in Hebrews 1:3, the exact imprint of the Father, also felt compassion the same way. It says, when he had compassion, that he was moved with compassion. And not a physical movement with compassion, it resulted in that, but a moving in the pit of his belly, in his guts. He was moved with compassion for those people. And he is moved with compassion for us. We had a couple who are just had their son, and there was a point in their pregnancy, and they're really good friends of ours, a point in their pregnancy when it was iffy and she had to go to the hospital, and we were praying for them. And I don't know if you guys have ever had this, but you're not there, you're nowhere near them, but you feel it in your stomach. You ever had this? You feel it in your gut. That's exactly the way that Jesus feels and carries his compassion for his people then and his people now. So much so that it draws us to the Messiah on the cross. When the passion of Christ, that second century term coined to describe the suffering of Jesus, the passion of Christ was to suffer with us. And our word compassion means to suffer with. That's what it means. And when Jesus had compassion on us, it drew him to the cross, where he suffered for us, in spite of us. And he continues to identify with us in every single way when we are at our lowest, when we are at our most vulnerable. A bruised reed he will not break, and a faint wick he will not quench. I want to just give three really quick applications for you. For you as a church, as a body, I felt in my heart to share with you that actually I feel like God is going to send you more and more people who are bruised reeds and faint wicks. I feel that he will give you, and it will be an extraordinary blessing to you, he will give you more and more people who need the strength of Jesus, who need the encouragement of the body around them. I was really stirred at Legacy 25, which was a conference in South Africa end of last year. Fuzzy Mokoena, who now leads Regions Beyond, stood up, and this was his first message to Regions Beyond, a global family of churches. And he could have said anything he wanted. He could have been like, let's go and see a million people saved in 20 years and all this sort of stuff. His call was to remember the poor. His call was to actually take us right back to the heart of God and say, actually, these are the people that we are called to love and called to care for and called to. And I feel like actually that is your call increasingly, is to welcome in those people. And you may yourself feel at that point yourself. You may feel like you're in a point of bruising and faintness. And I wanna encourage you today, if you're like the father in the story I shared, he was effectively the primary carer, to use our modern language. He was the primary carer in that story. He was the one that was with his son, that brought his son to Jesus. If you are a primary carer in this room, if you know that actually part of your role as a mum, a dad, a relative, maybe you're actually in that industry in social care yourself, I want to encourage you today, say just that God is with you, that his hand is on you. I really felt that when I was preparing. I felt God remind me of when I felt low, living in the Middle East, and you've got these huge sand dunes that look spectacular, but you try and walk up them, the sand is so soft that you can't get anywhere. You're continually trudging. You feel like you're making progress, and then you kind of look behind you and you're like, I've gone nowhere. And I just had this picture of God taking me by the hand and just leading me through it. Now, I still had to walk. I still had to step on the super soft sand, feel like I'm not going anywhere. But just the power of God with me, just the stability that he brought. And you as carers today, I feel like God just wants to bring that stability and remind you of that. And for all of us, the main application, the point we must get to, is the first words of Isaiah 42, which is, behold the servant. Behold the servant. The behold the servant that was pierced for our rebellion, crushed for our sins, beaten so that we could be made whole, and whipped so that we could be healed. Behold the servant. He will not grow faint. He will not be discouraged until justice has been established on the earth. When we behold the servant, we see on the cross, we see compassion and justice meeting in the same place. and we see the establishment of justice, what is right and true on the earth that is now working its way out to the coastlands. We see a God that was willing to take on the form of a servant, suffering even to the point of death for us so that we wouldn't have to do it. We see the God that binds up the reed, the God that supplies the oil to the flame. And actually, the more we see the cross and our servant on the cross, the more we realize that we ourselves are all bruised reeds, all faint wicks, all in the need of a savior, and filled now with the compassion to go and spread that out to others.